Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And welcome to Your Questions Answered. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to answer all of your burning wrestling questions. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views. We have interviews, more roundtable discussions like this one, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick at M Sidgwick on Twitter to answer all of your burning wrestling questions, and we'll dive straight into it. The replies that we got to our tweet on What Culture's Twitter at What Culture WWE, and a regular contributor who is Sugi Kenshin writes, is there an exact moment when you thought, okay, I want to write a book about AEW? They've ordered a signed copy, so can't wait for it. People are unaware, you're writing a book, or you've written a book, I should say, all about AEW. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. It is entitled Becoming All Elite, The Rise of AEW. It is available for pre-order right now as I speak at whatculture.bigcartel.com. The second that the company was announced, formed, whatever, I thought this would make a great story in itself before we even know if it's a success or not. And it is a success. It began life as an alternative, and within 2 years, in challenging the Raw demos, thrashing NXT within an inch of its goddamn life, competing with various markets in terms of live event ticket sales, beating their ass in New York City. It's evolved from alternative to competition. Fascinating story. I'd like to think that I'm one of the most insightful analysts out there when it comes to AEW. 120,000 words have been dedicated to the factors that led to the formation of AEW, the formation of the company itself, and the critical and commercial success of its two-year lifespan. I was first given the actual nod to do it by my bosses, who I'd like to shout out again. They're getting mensch in the acknowledgements as well. It was a dream project, and with dream projects, sometimes you just think, oh, if I get turned down pitching this, then that'll break my heart a little bit. So I didn't really think to pitch it because I didn't want to not do it at some point. And luckily, they said, we're really happy with the NXT book. Would you like to write a book about AEW? And what a question that is to get asked. Mm. The answer was, of course, yes. It's something I wanted to do and something I was given. I started work on it in February 2021. Obviously, I've been doing podcasts and website stuff in the meantime. But it's taken up a huge part of my year. I'm thrilled to share it with you imminently. And thank you very much for ordering a signed copy, by the way.
Yeah, and if you're a fan of the book that inspired this book, or you want to know what that is Development Hell. That is also available, whatculture.bigcartel.com, as well as 606 wrestling matches you need to see before you die, which Sidge was involved in writing.
I wrote half of it.
The original and the newer matches that we've added. We added 101 extra to that 505 book we released a while back. As I said, whatculture.bigcartel.com. Is it a question from me, actually? Is it difficult writing about promotion whilst it's still developing. And what by that I mean is, you know, you can write about a film or TV franchise because you can go, right, well, it's probably be a while until the next, I don't know, James Bond or something comes out. But for you, it's all well and good saying, oh, this is, you know, this is what led up to it and stuff. But it changes so rapidly. Was that difficult to deal with?
Yes, it was. I'm still proud of the NXT book, but in a way, I think over time it will develop a quality of a moment in time, covering a moment in time. But it's kind of a celebration of what NXT was, and it's completely turned into something completely different and significantly worse. So I was very conscious with this book about how it would age and how it's very much covering the factors that led to the formation and the first 2 years specifically. I've been very careful about not saying, that's it.
Yeah.
Wrestling saved. Like, it would be naive to suggest otherwise. And I was very much conscious of trying to predict what would age badly or what would read badly, even within 2 years. Like, this isn't a spoiler, it's obviously going to get covered. I put over the Cody Rhodes versus Chris Jericho feud to the goddamn hilt in this book. I thought it was classic. And neither man has the absolute uniformly best reputation. Chris Jericho's getting a better reaction in arenas, but online he very much divides opinion. Cody Rhodes is basically a heel masquerading as a babyface, and the extent to which that's all a character is the source of fierce debate. So I was conscious writing that, right? How important was this rivalry? How silly will it read to a reader now, putting it over as much as you have, given the respective reputations, both when it developed in year 3 of AEW, if you like. And I arrived at the decision. It was absolutely brilliant. You can put it over on its own terms because it will endure as something brilliant. But no, these were considerations, and it's a really good question.
We will hopefully do a sort of more long-form podcast with yourself, maybe in the next few weeks, all about the book, because I'm sure people have a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions, but we'll dive into the other wrestling questions and hopefully revisit that on another pod. Let's start with this one from Brandon Gibb, who says, we know the Elite, especially Omega, think in years. So if you look at this current Elite story with Hangman as act one of the Elite saga, what do you think the next acts of this story could be? Brandon says, my prediction is act two, the Elite turns on Omega, and act three is the implosion of the Bucks. What is next for the Elite for you?
For me, and it might be completely different for them, but what I would like to see, what I think makes the most narrative sense in the very long term is, and it's with a kind of a heavy heart that I predict this thing that probably might not even happen, because Kenny Omega is my favorite wrestler of all time, and I've adored this run. He's really, truly evolved into a genuinely fantastic episodic TV wrestling star. It's kind of the one thing that people beat him with at AEW's inception. He's totally evolved into something incredible. If you stack up his segments week to week and month to month, like, he's done all of this with the title change in mind. Some of it has been so incredibly fun and entertaining. The match quality has been excellent. He's dropped hooks. He's, like, folded in loads of different players into this sort of... often referred to it as an elegant narrative spider web that's caught loads of people inside of it. So I think it's been great. But as great as he remains in the ring, it's been quite obvious at various points that he's not the same athlete. And, you know, he's nearing 40. He works such a punishing, taxing style that, of course, his incredible natural athleticism was always going to get dulled by the grind, particularly when he takes, like, ridiculous head drops in virtually every single match. I think, especially when you look at the very landscape of All Elite Wrestling as we head towards 2022 with the signings of CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, with just a ridiculous array of talent on that roster, Cole, Page, Bucks, Miro, Eddie Kingston, Lance Archer, you can always do stuff with. The women's division really feels like it's finally clicking into gear. Maybe what we've said this before. This is all a very long way of saying that. I think AEW particularly since he's been on top for so long, since December 2020, in fact. I think AEW, as it currently stands, not only could benefit without Kenny Omega, but if anything, once the buzz of a CM Punk or a Bryan Danielson run wears off, if he takes a prolonged break to heal up, his body's kind of thrashed, and his shoulder's been giving him grief since, I believe, very late 2019 or early 2020.
I remember you pointing this out, yeah.
I think he's had like a torn labrum, like forever, that he just rehabs through. There's various matches where he's got the cupping marks, had a real spate of injuries. I believe he underwent stem cell treatment for those. But there remains core issues with his body, his engine, that he really could do with a fine tune. I think he should get the shoulder surgery that he's put off forever. In the meantime, the rest of his body will recuperate while he's doing physical therapy for that. There's more than enough talent for the company to flourish without Omega. In the meantime, when he comes back, maybe he'll need a little fresh star injection. I think you should do that after Full Gear. At which point, the Super Click sort of emerge in the wake of the old Elite, and that becomes the Young Bucks' primary concern, is being mates with Adam Cole, supporting him on his world title quest for Hangman Page. I don't think they should kick Kenny Omega out of the group, even though it would be a really nice callback to the various Bullet Club leader portrayals. I think you should just go away for a while. And the unspoken implication is that the Young Bucks are growing ever closer to Adam Cole and have forgotten about Omega. Maybe they could tease a little thing like the Dewey's moves and laugh at them or whatever. Something to indicate that they might be happy that he's out of the picture without a full-blown turn, because I don't think they should do one. In the meantime, Adam Cole, as a heel, is mapped towards Hangman Page, and that's the Revolution main event.
Okay.
Hangman Page, babyface, versus Adam Cole, heel. With the idea being that in the medium term, I would push Adam Cole as a superstar babyface, because he's just, for all the reasons that we all love him, the best guy, great in the ring, super marketable. You can put him on like chat shows or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just the best, most charismatic, nicest guy. Everyone chants his name as loud as they possibly can in arenas. Like, he's an absolute natural megastar babyface. Because he's a heel in this short-term, medium-term future, he can lose cleanly to Hangman Page at Revolution, because the money with him is in a babyface turn down the line. And you can deftly dovetail those developments. Adam Cole loses to Page at Revolution. So what you have there is he loses, but he's going to be a babyface, so he can absorb a loss as a heel. Hangman Page's title run goes from strength to strength with a nice clean win over a massive star in Adam Cole. I'm sure the storytelling would be great, because that's what the Elite do, great storytelling. Kenny Omega returns shortly after Revolution, and after all those teases of all the books with Adam Cole, and the Elite turn on Adam Cole, and you lead to a big program between Adam Cole and Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega's still the heel, because I genuinely think that Adam Cole, at this moment in time, would probably get a better live reaction as a babyface than Omega. And there's still time in like 2 years to have Kenny Omega turn babyface again and then build towards Omega versus Cole as your sort of Double or Nothing All Out 2021 program. That's how I would see the next 8 months going.
I really like that. Personally, I'd like to see elements of what you said there. First and foremost, I've said this for quite some time now, so I'm just going to stick to it. I think the Revolution main event needs to be Hangman Page versus MJF. I think MJF beats Darby Allin, if I'm booking this, at Full Gear. And then where else can he go but the title picture? And we've talked about this a million times. The first pay-per-view title defense of
I've changed my mind.
But the thing is, I have seen, you know, the discussion, especially this week, for example, on social media, of the fact of, you know, is it about the journey with Hangman Page winning the world title, or, you know, can he sustain that as world champion?
I've got no doubt that MJF should probably be the guy to dethrone him, but I just think that with the way that AEW does their title runs, I think at the very least, because I have kind of evolved my opinion, I never said he should lose it the next week, I don't think either of us said something daft like that, but I think one genuine, dramatic, he might actually lose this pay-per-view defense against heel Adam Cole, knowing the money's in him as a babyface, and then he can drop it to MJF. I think after all this time, 2 years of investment, he deserves one. Jesus Christ, he might actually lose the title. Oh, Christ, he didn't. Like, the relief of a proper big time, he wins a pay-per-view main event.
My only suggestion was going to be, and it may be pretty quick, a fast turnaround and a difficult sell immediately to be like, oh, make us out of the picture and this guy's in. Could just do it, Winter Is Coming, if they're going to do something like that. But I completely agree. I think that's the right direction overall for the Elite. And yeah, can't have Adam Cole, that handsome bastard, be a heel for too long because, yeah, like you say, it's one of those things where
people have wanted him to be a heel for at least 2019. Like, at least since 2019, people have been desperate. And between 2019 and 2021, he's played a babyface for all of a month or something.
Yeah, you were clamoring for him to do it in NXT.
Yes, absolutely.
And it didn't happen. Speaking of NXT, actually, let's move on to this question from Jimmy Pierce, who says, if Kyle O'Reilly does indeed escape from the woods and Von Wagner and NXT anytime soon and gets to AEW, first of all, I'd love to know your thoughts on whether or not you think that's going to happen. And would you like to see Red Dragon in the tag division? And if so, what are your dream matches for them?
It's going to happen and it should happen. I mean, I'm not being funny. Kyle O'Reilly is a smart guy. He's a really nice guy. He can't not be watching AEW and watching Bobby Fish and Adam Cole in their respective roles get like a lot of investment put in them and think, and I'm happy, you know, in NXT, bleeding in the next generation. Like, Kyle O'Reilly is barely even the current generation. He's still in his very early 30s. I think he's just so nice that he'll go without shooting. He'll just go, do the same thing Adam Cole did, basically. I'm not saying they're a hive mind, but they are very close, and it just makes all the sense in the world. Kyle O'Reilly's gone. He just is. AEW should sign him. They just should. If you asked me this question like 3 months ago, even when he's kind of struggling during the Adam Cole feud in NXT, I'm still thinking he can't go back and do Red Dragon because that's below Kyle O'Reilly. But at the minute, it's not really. Like, Kyle O'Reilly has floundered in NXT this year. He has struggled to project himself with the same star power as Adam Cole. The cool Kyle stuff and his very earnest, I'll be your friend, Von Wagner. Like, the scripting in WWE kills Kyle O'Reilly more than it kills most and Thing of the Ground that covers. He couldn't necessarily arrive. He's got enormous superstar singles potential. I've got no doubt about that whatsoever. But maybe a Red Dragon reunion and then something from there. Because if you think about it, AEW's tag team division, it exists, but it could really do with a proper name team at this point. FTR do FTR things to kind of divisive reactions in terms of how over or even how good they are. The Young Bucks, I suspect, will not be involved in that title picture for quite some time. Proud and Powerful seem the next in line after FTR to do something with the Lucha Brothers, but beyond that, I just think they could definitely
shot in the arm for that tag division. I think you're right there.
Yeah.
And you've got some, like you say, dream matches with any of the names you've mentioned there. And, well, who knows what happens next? You've got these random tag teams popping up with Cody and Pac.
I'd love to see Kyle O'Reilly work the Lucha Brothers. Mm. I'd absolutely love to see that. Just him striking, just plucking them out of the middle of the air, mid-flight. Those ridiculous catch submissions. I think that'd be absolutely awesome.
A great question just coming here from Mark Callow, who says, has this been the best... Mark Callow, he says, has this been the best year of Bryan Danielson's career? I thought it'd be interesting to ask you that in particular, considering your adoration for the man, understandably.
I mean...
WrestleMania main event.
WrestleMania main event. Best thing that WWE's done all year by a considerable distance. And then the very next match he had was against Roman Reigns, and the very next match he had after that was the Kenny Omega at Grand Slam. If he maintains this form, maybe, but like...
Are we going April to April then, you think?
Yeah, but like it's a calendar year, maybe, but like He really was just working. He was getting beat off Cesaro in 4 minutes on SmackDown before they realised, oh, Edge is boring. We need to save this somehow. Break emergency glass, get Danielson, get the dragon. So he didn't do that much. He did some awesome stuff at the very top end of the Fed this year. But in between those matches, he was just doing now on TV. He had 4 months off. This run in AEW is an absolute all-timer. But enjoy the recency bias. It's amazing to feel things in the moment. But if I was to take a step back, I would say that his 2007 ROH stuff for me. It's like 2007, 2006, 2008, like any of those years, like the Kenta Morishima. That was all awesome.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
From one of your favorite wrestlers and one of the most thrilling guys to step into in between the ropes to a very polar opposite question from the H stands for on Twitter. It says, who is on Michael Sidgwick's Mount Boardmore? Which I assume means the most boring wrestlers that you can think of.
And it's four because it's Rushmore pun.
Yes.
Randy Orton, Triple H, Kane and The Big Show.
Any reasoning behind that? Or do you,
I've watched really Randy Orton have the same match for about 22 years and I've had people tell me that he's one of the all-time greats as a result. And as I put it in an article once, like, I eat soup for consistency. I like good consistency in soup. Not too thin, not too thick.
Mm-hmm.
It's not stew, it's not water. It's soup. If I want consistency out of something that is dependable on a winter night, right? I'll eat soup. I will not watch professional wrestling. I watch professional wrestling to get fired up, to feel things, to get exhilarated, to feel like I'm just living and dying with the suspense. I don't watch a guy who's really fluid, great footwork, great timing, great positioning. Like, I'm not a coach. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not one of the boys who really enjoys how, like, fun, great fun and Merrill. Like, Randy Orton's the epitome of great fun and Merrill. Like, right, he's not great on telly, not a great TV star. I've watched him have the same match so often, just no spark, no dynamic to it whatsoever. Triple H is basically Randy Orton with longer hair and a bigger nose. So he's exactly the same. And he's just exact same match structure. Playing out to kind of abject silence. Like, they will look back on the 2000s and 2010s with Triple H on top for about 15 years. In about 30 years' time, they'll think, how did anyone put up with this? Like, I know millions stopped watching, but why didn't the millions and millions stop watching to get to net zero? Because it was so tedious. The guy just... understand that he's great. He can flail when he's in a hold. He's great at selling. He's great at bumping. His timing is totally spot on. He knows how to pace a match. But at the end of the day, the reactions say everything. Mm. Kane can do a big boot, a palm strike to the throat, like a rubbish side slam where his stupid big giant knees get in the way of himself. And it's like so there's such a lack of elegance to Kane's work. And he's like, at least they've had great matches, Orton and Triple H. Kane was in it, in wrestling, since like 1997. 20 years before he really started to just stop doing it that much. And he's never had a great match without Plunder or like a couple of tag team partners.
Mm.
Name a good non-gimmicked Kane singles match.
I genuinely can't. I was sitting there thinking...
And how many have you watched? It's a disgrace.
I didn't need to watch Kane wrestle from 2002. That was it. I was like, I've seen the Kane match now. Like, came in, watch this guy, fire, boom. I'd love to be there for, his entrance back in the day.
I hate him in the Attitude Era. I just thought he was sluggish, ponderous worker with a cartoonish gimmick. And he moves funny. I've told you this.
Yes.
I've got a thing about wrestlers moving funny, informed by my lifelong adoration of Bret Hart, who in fact didn't move funny. The crispest execution.
Mm.
Kane moves funny. I like wrestlers who move funny. I like wrestlers who are boring, who move funny, and who are in it for 20 years. That's the definition of boring to me, and Big Show's exactly the same.
Yeah, you're not going to hear many arguments from anyone on this. I was just thinking when you're talking about Triple H, that was the moment for me at WrestleMania 35. My first ever WrestleMania. You know how energetic I am, and we'd been to like the Bullet Club block party beforehand. I was bouncing off the walls. This is a big day. Need to keep the energy levels up. Iconics win their women's tag titles, of course. Kofi Mania happens. And I know people said, right, after that, that was it. It should have just, we should have stopped then and done the next day of WrestleMania. And I agree, but I was still going. I was still like, you know what? Yeah, a 1 minute long Samoa Joe match. Prefer if he'd killed Dominic at ringside, but I can't have everything.
We're going to have it on Monday when he does the electric chair.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to kill you.
Right. Even Roman Reigns' return facing Drew McIntyre, I was still up at that point. And then Triple H made his entrance.
Or the longest match.
Batista made his entrance. And that was the moment. I knew that, Triple H was one of the most boring wrestlers because he went 25 minutes with Batista. And that was my moment.
Arrogant.
I want to go home now. I'm ready to go home. And we had a long
old evening. The hotel to the bloody plane.
Yeah, that was it. Thank you very much. I've done the thing. But it was just infuriating that. So I think that's a hell of a shout for your Mount Boardmore, which I love. We'll do a couple of WWE questions.
Why?
Because just to balance things out. Interesting one from here, from a Furo tweets. Who should win next year's Royal Rumble? They say, I feel it should be Kevin Owens, if he's still in the company. But who do you guys think will win it? Odds of it being Bron Breakker are very high.
Well, he's onto something. Or they're onto something, rather. I play a game for every Royal Rumble, particularly for the past two or three, 4 years. Who's the least knackered? Right? Who have they tried and failed to push? Who's the one guy or girl who is not A, broken from following a ridiculously botched push, B, not already a champion, C, isn't just like really just a part of the furniture who they're not really going to push because they've already been and gone or they're just in the upper mid-card or whatever. Who is, there's like a formula, the least, who's the least knackered?
Yes, it's a good shout.
And the least knackered, as far as I can see, is Damian Priest.
Yes.
They haven't given up on his push. He hasn't already been in the main event picture. He hasn't really had his turn. They haven't botched his turn. The fans are still with him. He fits the profile. These are all very cynical questions you have to ask. It's not who's the best wrestler, who's getting the loudest reactions. He doesn't get that many loud reactions. It's basically who fits the aesthetic mold, who have they not completely botched and or normalized. And I think the answer is Damian Priest.
It's a hell of a shout, that. I really like that as a suggestion. I'd say, even though it doesn't really adhere to your rules there, someone who may win it on the women's side, I was going to say this year, next year, is Rhea Ripley, because they
were... Botched her twice?
I know, but that's what I mean is, that's somewhere they go, oh yeah, forget about all that, now she won the Rumble.
Yeah.
Like when Shinsuke came in and they went, oh yeah, but now he's won the Rumble.
Yeah.
That, I feel like they could do something for Rhea Ripley. Wild card pick for me. I don't know who the hell he'd face or how it would work. Or you, I suppose you could do Roman. It's not going to be Rock, for example. Montez Ford.
I mean, they like him, apparently.
Mm. But I still have a feeling that maybe we're going to get someone who loses to Roman Reigns at WrestleMania and he goes for like a two-year stint.
Roman Brock's having a mania.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, it's going to be Brock. Yeah, what am I thinking?
So Brock, and then maybe they don't... Maybe they'll realise, well, we've got literally no one else. So Ford or Priest to win the Rumble. I don't really care.
No. I think Brock wins the Rumble. I think babyface Brock wrecking dudes from number 30 possibly could be the case.
I just, please have all, I don't care. Yeah. I was going to say make them all heels who's left in there, but they'll just kill everyone. As well.
Or Bearcat. Yeah, count him out.
I've counted him out since late 2020.
Quick one.
Not because of his talent, just because they're...
Oh, no. No, absolutely not. Just a few speed round questions for you here.
Why the hell not?
Which creative decline hit you harder, says Joshua James? The Simpsons or Monday Night Raw?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good question. Raw. Because the thing with The Simpsons is comedy, animated, stand-up, sitcom, web, whatever. I can always laugh with my friends, laugh with ridiculous, stupid videos you watch on YouTube. I had a void that could easily be filled by The Simpsons being in decline, as much as I adored it, with just so much other stuff, like Arrested Development. I discovered Seinfeld after The Simpsons' golden age had finished, like just countless things. Whereas with wrestling, I had New Japan Pro Wrestling. That was it until AEW.
Yes.
Like, I'd watch, you know, PWG on DVD, but it's really not the same, like... It's just not the same watching a months-old show without any episodic shows. Great as the matches are, it just doesn't really fill any void. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I almost fell out of love with wrestling just before I started the job at What Culture, actually.
Oz says, if Hangman is winning the title from Omega, should he be the one who kicks out of the One-Winged Angel too? If not, who?
Well, I was mad on the idea of Hangman Page being the one to kick out the One-Winged Angel. It would just be a lovely symbolic end to his complete lack of belief in himself and his anxiety that he can do the thing that nobody else other than Kota Ibushi's done. And now I'm starting to think, how pivotal is that to the story? It's all about the title, realistically. It all stems from All Out 2019 when Hangman Page failed to win that world title. And the reason he believes he did is because the Young Bucks didn't second him. Their motives are understandable as well. The storyline's fantastic. And his recapturing the title, whether he kicks out the One-Winged Angel or not, is the story. It's not about the One-Winged Angel. I think that was just a nice bit of fantasy booking. At the minute, I'm genuinely leaning towards, save it. Save it.
I agree.
Save it for somebody else down the line. Because you've got something awesome in that. Like, at this point, it is 11 years... Isn't it 20? What's 2021 minus 2012?
9 years.
9 years. I can't do maths. Can't write books. WhatCulture.BigCartel.com. 9 years of just beautiful investment and just, it's a myth of a move at this point. You could give it to somebody else.
Yeah, I agree. I think.
What a pop, though, if it's Hangman. If he's going to write himself out of storylines for 6 months. Maybe. I'd just love to see it. I just want to hear it.
It's the hearing it, isn't it?
I want
to
hear it. I want to feel it.
Especially compared to Full Gear last year because of the complete lack of bloody noise. A few more questions, then we'll get to the one final big one. Jonathan Hammond says, how likely is it that Malachi Black's allusions to Caesar indicate a betrayal by Arn Anderson? Was this foreshadowed by Tully and Arn's face-off on Dynamite this week?
It's one of those where because it's an Anderson and a Rhodes together... A lot of people have fantasy booked on turning on Cody since the second Arn became his coach. So it's one of those things where I can't answer this question. One, because I feel like I've probably answered, yeah, he's going to turn up a million times. My credibility in that regard is probably shot. And two, I've got no idea what Cody's doing. So I can't predict anything that he's doing. I've got no idea at all.
Lena Alto, what's your favourite wrestling storyline from past or present?
Legitimately, my favourite wrestling storyline of all time. And this probably is informed by recency bias. And in 5 years, I might revise my opinion. But it's nice to live in the moment and feel things as you do. Hangman Page's arc, I think, is perfect. Absolute perfection. It all begins, I'm not going to recount it. I do it in the book, which you can buy at whatculture.bigcartel.com. But the fact that it all starts with Hangman Page asking his friends for a favor, and his friends have a legitimate reason to, like, not grant it, you know what I mean?
It's just,
it's all perfect. It's all very relatable. The world's totally broken. Hangman Page feels like it isn't as much. If I'm not, something that I've loved for my entire adult lifespan that has stood the test of time, ironically, the Attitude Era on the whole hasn't, I could watch an Austin McMahon documentary and just have the hits and every beat presented to me in a fun one-hour documentary. I could probably watch that once every 2 months and just still pop. And it's stupid. It didn't really have a beginning, middle, and end. It was so goddamn entertaining. And honestly, the first 3 or 4 or 5 months of Austin versus McMahon, until the summer when the fucking Undertaker and Kane ruin it, there's some really subtle, great acting before they go full ham. And it's still really great.
Yeah.
But some genuinely great subtle stuff at the very, very start in the early months. So, yeah, that stood the test of time. But I'm thinking Hangman Page arc.
Final couple of questions. Joe LFC, which of the four pillars will win the AEW World Heavyweight title first, and who will be the last to win it?
MJF will win it first. He's an established main event guy. Jungle Boy will win it last. I've got reservations about whether Alan or Guevara will win it at all.
Wow. I think Alan wins, maybe even wins it from MJF.
Potentially.
Final question here.
I think Guevara's a fantastic upper mid-card talent. I'd like to see him put on more mass. He's got a very mid-card figure.
He's getting there. I know he's slowly developing, isn't he?
That seems counterintuitive because Alan's so small, but Alan's like a really distinct kind of body type, whereas Guevara, because he would look weird if he was jacked.
Yes.
And it would ruin his ring style and his mystique and his whole character of like the ridges of his spine gliding against aprons. Like, he needs to stay that size forever.
Brian Cage doing a coffin drop.
Yeah. But Guevara, I think, I can see his form. I think he's a bit skinny for the role of a tippy-top guy. Jim Cornette or like Jim Ross, but I feel like it in this very moment.
I think he can. I think his body will grow into it, or he'll develop into something like that. And even if he doesn't, I still think there's, you know, look at, no one looked at that defeat of Miro and went, it's not believable. So I think there's potential there.
Maybe it's because he's stuck in this crap storyline at the minute.
Yeah, fair enough. Speaking of which, the final question here comes from GreyRat03 on Twitter, who says, have you found the build to Full Gear as underwhelming as I have? It feels like nothing's really got going. None of the stories feel very pay-per-view worthy, except the world title match. I'll just quickly run you through the card if you're unaware. Of course, we have Kenny Omega, Hangman Page for the AEW World Championship, the AEW World Championship Eliminator Tournament Final, Bryan Danielson versus Miro. You got Britt Baker defending the Women's World title against Tay Conti. You got the Inner Circle versus Men of the Year and American Top Team. Lucha Bros defending the tag titles against FTR. Darby Allin versus MJF. And a couple more, one would assume. We'll talk more about this tomorrow on the Rampage preview. Probably Punk versus Kingston. And Cody and Pac versus Andrade and Malakai, possibly. But yeah, it's weird because it's the match we've been waiting 2 years to see in terms of the world title. But what do you think of everything else around it?
I'm inclined to agree, and this take is going to feel contradictory and all over the place. I've enjoyed virtually every Dynamite between All Out and Full Gear immensely.
Mm.
And yet, the actual storylines gearing towards the pay-per-views, the pay-per-view, I'm the same.
Do you think they're hampered by the fact that they're And, you know, it's been great, like you say, over the summer. And since, well, maybe arguably since something like Winter Is Coming, to see them do these bigger, I should say, TV shows. But you think that's maybe the hampered the build between pay-per-views?
I think they've got the excuse. They've got Punk in, Danielson in, Cole in. Like, let's go. Golden New Era of Pro Wrestling. I think that one started in May 2019, if I'm honest. But, yeah, going through the card very quickly before we wrap up. Paige Omega, 2 years in the making. Could not be more hyped for that match. I almost don't want it to come because I know it'll be 30 minutes before it ends. It's just the most emotionally invested I've been in a pro wrestling storyline as an adult. And they're doing the bits now of, like, we have to sell the pay-per-view. Like, to other people, we know the hardcores have been in this for 2 years. Into that. Danielson versus Miro will be fantastic, but it's under a cloud for obvious reasons.
But it is a match we can't call.
It's a match we can't call. It's one of two matches on this card where I'm thinking, I've got literally no idea who's winning this, and I think that's a great, great thing. Baker versus Ty Conti. It's much the same as Statlander. Didn't really do much for me in the build. It feels very predictable.
Get to Thunder Rosa.
Get to Thunder Rosa, at, like, exactly. And it should over-deliver on the night. The Inner Circle versus American Top Team is hot in the ring, hot in the stands, problematic invisible wall bollocks in the patter. It's the most I've felt removed from AEW. It's always felt like something that I've been on top of. I've felt sort of really emotionally invested in everything. I feel like I'm really pulls apart from this promotion when I'm watching this. It feels like I'm not an AEW fan because if that's what the fan base is, I don't really want to be a part of it.
Just a note on that. I feel like we represent a quite decent cross-section, the three of us, me, you and Hamflet. Often we'll come in here, you'll be the high guy on something. I feed off either of you. If you say it's good, I'll go, yeah, it's probably good. Yeah. Or it's bad, I say, well, it's probably bad, yeah. And maybe Hamflet can be more negative with certain things. It's very rare, you know, we can be unanimous in our praise of a lot of things in AEW. It's very rare that we come in, we're unanimous in our dislike of something, and that also, like you say, almost goes against public opinion. It's surreal, this. But, I mean, listen to the Dynamite review if you haven't already. We spent about 10 minutes on this today. Just explaining, look, I understand certain fans absolutely adore this, but we've had issues with, like, we're excited about in the match, we've said it's one of the most anticipated things going into this pay-per-view, and it is, and it's thrilling, but the nuts and bolts we're not happy with across the board, I think.
Yeah, I don't think anticipation's quite the word. I just feel like, in the moment, I think the match will be, like, a lot of fun. I'm worried that Chris Jericho's going to kiss Paige Van Zandt on the outside without her consent to pay off this whole thing.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. So I'm really worried about that. Elsewhere, Darby Allin versus MJF. Like, 4-star, 8 out of 10 build. It's a really great mid-card attraction. Upper mid-card attraction. It begins to fall down for me when you look at, and this is such a testament to how great they are, the Young Bucks not holding the World Tag Team Championships has resulted in two things. One, their feuds throughout the entire of 2021 have been awesome. The stuff with MJF and Chris Jericho and how we knew that was going to have ramifications on the Inner Circle saga at the time. Mm. Like, is there going to be a Wolfpack, a split? Is he planning a stable and secret? Is there any relation to the Horseman stuff? How that all overlapped. Loads of drama. Great. Funny.
I was just thinking
with Papa Buck, with the ketchup. It was really earnestly and ironically great. Really underrated, I think, Chris Jericho and MJF versus the Young Bucks. And then they had
Depose.
Yeah. Then they hit and, like, run, scram. Then they had the feud with Mox and Kingston, which was awesome. It was so good that it was almost ruined by the fact that Mox and Kingston didn't win. If that would have been the feud of the year and match of the year for me, if Mox and Kingston had won that. But then we had that exact same feeling with the Lucha Brothers. And just them being such dicks and getting such heat back in front of fans, and it all led to the cage match where they got the comeuppance. Take the titles off them and they do some, yeah, good stuff with Jurassic Express and Christian Cage, but it all feels like They were doing that during the Cage Omega build before All Out. They are doing it after the fact. They've already done a trios match and in eight man. It just feels like the two matches they're building around the books feel way more Dynamite worthy than pay-per-view worthy. And the books not being the title holders mean we get FTR and Lucha Brothers in a fairly wacky sports entertainment stuff. Like, basically, the Young Bucks are stars, and them not being presented as bigger stars as they were at the start and the middle points of 2021, it's kind of had an adverse effect on the complexion of the full gear and build and lineup. The Young Bucks rule is what I'm trying to say.
Mm. And then you've got like a couple of other matches that I think.
Like Punk Kingston.
I was going to say bubbling up at the perfect time.
Wait until Saturday morning and I'll change my answer completely.
Exactly. This is what I was about to see. Punk Kingston and the surrealness of, like I say, a pack Cody Alliance versus Malakai Black and Andrade. I don't know if that's going on the pay-per-view or not. But
the tag match is probably going to go on the pay-per-view and I've got no idea how much I like it, how much it makes sense, what's going on. I just know that tag match has got a real chance to steal that undercard, genuinely.
Weird to not have Cole on this card.
He's going
to
wear Christian Cage, I think.
Oh, of course, yes. Yeah, I knew there was another match that was mentioning.
They've interacted in eight-mans and trios matches. It doesn't really feel like a proper mid-card AEW singles match.
Also, realise I pitched Adam Cole to fight Winter Is Coming, completely neglecting they've got an Eliminator Tournament final that you sense will probably lead to that mirror and Brian Danielson going, don't forget about this. So, yeah, they've got an embarrassment of riches about next potential title contenders. But, yeah, I am inclined to agree with...
When I watch the finish of All Out, I expect it to feel more for full gear than I do right now.
That's fair. I think that's fair. But let us know your thoughts on that and everything we've discussed today on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Hopefully we'll continue the conversation. You can also follow Michael Sidgwick at
MSidgwick.
WhatCulture.BigCartel.com for his new book. You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, where you also see more tweets, hopefully with more of these, because I really enjoy doing these with you.
I love these ones, I.
But yes,
and so a lot of people ask me questions, not being a dick on Twitter. I feel like I just don't have the time to get around to them. So this is a nice way of doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
Matt Reigns is going to be good that he's missed this.
Oh, man.
Sorry, Matt. Next time, I'll answer your question.
What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from, for Daily Wrestling Podcast. We'll be back tomorrow to preview Rampage, to preview SmackDown, and of course, Wrestle Culture with a hashtag Bloody Good Quiz. But for now, this has been Your Questions Answered. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.